What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And I'm Michael Barr. Every week at this time, plus Mondays and Wednesdays, we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. Today, we're breaking down the NFL's new COVID policy. The league is warning teams that COVID outbreaks among unvaccinated players could lead to forfeited games and fines. Coming up, we speak with industry expert Bob Bolin of Penn State University. Plus, we get the perspective from three-time NFL Pro Bowl running back Warwick Dunn.
That is all straight ahead on the Bloomberg Business of Sports show. But first, let's talk about some of the other top stories of the week. We got to talk a little bit of NBA Finals. We have wrapped up that season, and it's going to be back before we know it. That's just the way the world is working. We were excited, though, that our colleagues over in Bloomberg Television got to catch up with Mark Lazary. He, of course, is the co-owner of the Bucks. He's well-known on Wall Street because he runs the investment group Avenue Capital. And he told Bloomberg that the Bucks are being approached by brands who are looking to capitalize on the team's newfound success. No surprise there. He also talked a lot about something we're familiar with, guys, the Deer District. Tens of thousands of people, not just inside the arena, but outside, whooping it up and getting very, very excited. Take a listen.
We had literally about 85,000 people in the stadium and outside, which I think is the first time for the NBA. It's great for the city. It's great for the state. It's made people sort of now notice Milwaukee. You know, I've been saying all along that this is America's team. I believe it. I mean, I really do. I think people love Giannis. They love what we've been able to sort of put together. I sort of look forward to the future and hope that we can continue at least on the road that we're on.
So that was Mark Lazary, co-owner of the Bucks. One interesting thing, guys, to note, he's talking about Giannis there. Top three in terms of jerseys sold over the course of the season. You know who was ahead of him? LeBron and Steph. So that's pretty good company. He is an absolute breakout star. You know, you drop 50 points in the deciding game, the game six of this finals. It was just incredible. He also, Mark Lazary noting, the Bucks sold more merchandise than all but three other NBA title winners after they were victorious over the Suns, and that's according to Fanatics. So this is good business. Winning, no surprise, Lynchy, winning, good for business.
You know, this group bought the Bucks back in 2014 for $550 million, and as of February, Forbes had them valued at $1.625 billion.
Yeah.
It's an embraceable franchise, it's an embraceable team, and this is an incredible amount of money, an incredible value for the 37th largest market in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, Barr, there was not a lot of tune-in, as it were, to these NBA Finals. We talked about that earlier in the week, that especially you got to set aside the bubble year. This was the second worst showing in this so far this century, in the first 20 years of this century. So pretty brutal when it comes to TV ratings. But the excitement and the merch, to some extent, speak for themselves. And it was also interesting to hear Mark Lazary talk about the fact, I should say, that, you know, they're looking toward the future. This was not a cobbled together superstar team. They really built this franchise, and there's a lot of excitement, not just in Milwaukee, but beyond. So that's cool.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Giannis scored 50 with a Willis Reed leg. And yeah. I mean, it's amazing what he did. I mean, no wonder why he's third in the merchandising sales. And when, you know, as we go through all of the NBA draft stuff and we see who's going to get what and this and that, whatever, I want to see how the merchandising aspect happens for some of the rookies now coming in the NBA league.
Yeah, well, when we'll on the next show probably be able to talk a bit about what's going on with the NBA draft, what happened with the NBA draft this week as we break all that down. Meanwhile, over in Tokyo, the Olympics are going on, and it has been a strange games indeed. And the big headlines truly are really about things that aren't necessarily happening on the playing surface or in the gym or whatever that is. Simone Biles certainly dominated the headlines with her decision not to participate, pulling herself out of the team competition and then opting not to participate in the all-around. This made a huge number of headlines. She cited her own mental health as the main reason that she was not participating, and it really has been in the spotlight, not just because of her, but of course this follows Naomi Osaka opting out of some big tennis tournaments over the summer. Our colleague Kurumi Mori over at Bloomberg Quick Take, she talked to Dr. Jared Spencer, and he works with pro teams and college athletes, and he put this in the context of the pandemic. Let's listen to what he had to say.
The pandemic has been the single biggest factor in mental health, and for two reasons. One, we're all struggling. And number two, the stigma's fallen. Everyone knows that we're all struggling, so no longer do we have to pretend like we're fine and we're just able to suck it up. It's more about transparency and honesty and realism and people saying, you know what? It's okay not to be okay. And the pandemic's impact has really changed mental health.
So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And later on, we're going to hear from Warwick Dunn Lynchy, and his perspective on this, I think, reminds us that this is not a cut and dried issue when it comes to athletes. This is something that is still evolving. This is something that, just like as Dr. Spencer was saying there, we're all wrestling with, athletes are wrestling with, and unfortunately, they have to wrestle with it, you know, essentially out in public. But I think it's fair to say this is, at least for the moment, what we will remember these Olympics for.
Well, it's real. It doesn't show up on an X-ray, an MRI, or a CAT scan. And unless you've walked in the shoes of Naomi Osaka or Simone Biles, you don't understand. But these are people that have been crying for help, and they're getting the help they needed. And I can't wait to hear what Warwick Dunn has to say about it, as he has come out and said that he suffered through some mental issues during his playing days. So I'm looking forward to what he has to say about it.
Yeah, it's certainly a big issue. All right, so this is where this last topic that we're going to talk about before we get on with the show, this is where Barr and Lynchy collide. DraftKings, the Sox, it's all happening. Lynchy, it's like you and Barr, this is like a little coming together. It's lovely to see, for me at least. Tell us about what's going on with your Sox and this new betting platform.
Yeah, Lynchy, well, what do you think?
Well, you know, I'm softening a little bit. I came around a name, image, and likeness. I thought that was a big step in my part. And
yeah, I have to say, you very much evolved on that. That's true.
And this whole, I just think the line is just so blurred now between gambling and professional sports. You know, I wonder what Pete Rose is thinking about all these marriages of these gambling outlets and professional teams. I remember when Joe Namath owned a piece of a restaurant, Bachelor's 3, in New York City, and Pete Rozelle was the commissioner and wanted him to divest his ownership because known gamblers were hanging out there, and Joe Namath abruptly retired and resigned from the National Football League. He came back a couple days later. But now it's here. It's here to stay. DraftKings is on the left field. It's on the monster, the left field wall. It's going to be prominent behind home plate. It's every two steps you take at Fenway Park, you're going to run into DraftKings. The Massachusetts House just passed approval yesterday on a legalized gambling bill, 156-3. It's now in the Senate Ways and Means Committee, and it won't be long before we're step right up to the plate and step right up to DraftKings and put down your $2. On whatever wager you want here at Fenway Park.
Well, there you go, Barr. See, I mean, now I'm looking at this from a very positive perspective, that now maybe you're warming toward the Boston Red Sox a little bit, Barr. I don't know. Like, this is good. These are your people.
Well, my greed and debauchery has kind of worn off on Lynchy, which I'm glad to see. and listen, this is going to be here to stay, folks. As more states pick up on sports betting, it's going to be here. Now, and I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to get anybody into, hey, you got go out and gamble and do all the. No, if you want to bet like a $5 or $10 bet and whatever, hey, enjoy. I'm not talking about trying to make a living out of it. That's a whole different thing. But it's, you know, it's going to be here, and it's going to be here for a while. But if you want to enjoy a little nickel dime gambling, go out, enjoy it.
Well, it does feel like, and it feels like the NBA was on the leading edge of this, Lynchy, keep me honest here, that they were really the first league to you know, kind of embrace it. And whether they liked it or not, it was happening. I mean, I do remember talking to Adam Silver years ago about this, and him being, I think he surprised people and caught some people off guard and basically was like, listen, guys, let's be realistic about this. Major League Baseball franchises and Major League Baseball, I think it's fair to say, not always the most progressive of folks. Mm-hmm. They're not always on the bleeding edge, as it were. But it is interesting to see this. And look, this is a business. And, you know, these are big companies that are wanting to sponsor and wanting to pay money to be more visible in a lot of ballparks and through a lot of broadcasts and things like that. And ultimately, as long as it's done safely and fairly, it does seem to be good for the broader, at least for the bottom line of business. So interesting to see such a storied franchise linking up with this. I guess we can't even call DraftKings upstart anymore. I mean, they're a big publicly traded company. That sort of says it all about where we are.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Let's get to this week's interview with Bob Boland. He teaches over at the Law School and Labor School at Penn State University. He was a player agent before that for about 20 years, and in that role, he negotiated hundreds of contracts and endorsement deals for players. He's the perfect person to talk to because we want to get into some news over the last couple weeks. The NFL, they are essentially saying, look, players, coaches, owners, we're going to have to set some rules in place around COVID protocols that are economic at their core in order to ensure that we can get games played. And what they're saying is basically that if those protocols are violated, a team will have to forfeit the game. And both teams then will have to forfeit then the revenue and the economics associated with those games. It is a big deal and stands to change a lot of what may happen if, in fact, those rules are broken over the course of this upcoming NFL season. Bob, really good to have you with us. How do you unpack this issue of what to tell whom to do and the economic implications and the labor implications and contracts and all of that? Help us unpack it.
It's a remarkably interesting thing. I think the NFL has actually done it, from their leadership perspective, has done a remarkable job of making it a key economic issue right from the get-go. And I think Roger Goodell has acted very responsibly in taking charge of a situation that he can't necessarily control himself, which is the issue of players getting vaccinated or the public health issue. But he has taken control of what he can control, which is the issue of forfeiting games and the allocation of cost. And while I think he may have gone a little too far in that, I think it's certainly, if you were thinking about it, it's certainly a big stick he's wielding with a small carrot at the other side.
How far does the league go in trying to be accommodating to a team that does have a COVID problem? Last season, we went through where, well, we'll play the game Monday. Well, we'll play the game Tuesday, maybe even Wednesday. How far does the league go with that?
I think the league is showing it isn't going to go as far, and it's not going to go that far if there's a clear gap in vaccine and or vaccinations and in care. I think this time again they're wielding the stick that will be sympathetic if it is a multiple process, but I don't think they're going to be sympathetic if there's been you know, kind of an abuse of the process, and players have broken protocols and or have chosen not to be vaccinated, and it's caused delays. So this is, their way of creating a carrot: get vaccinated, follow the rules, and saying to their players and owners, whatever your personal belief is here, you can have it, but it can't stop our business, and it can't stop our ideally $16 billion annual business and growing.
What's going on inside NFL locker rooms right now in terms of peer pressure? Veterans who have been vaccinated, some younger guys who are wearing the wristbands and have to eat in another room and take saunas and steams in another room and have to wear masks. What's going on in there?
A lot of peer pressure. The NFL, I think, the NFL to mandate vaccines would have to go through the Players Association. That would give the Players Association a bit of extra leverage, even though this should probably be a we problem. It gives them the ability to kind of say, hey, we have six other complaints we'd like to have addressed too. By doing what the league is doing, setting up the protocols, doing what they're doing, they can use the players' own pressure of getting paid, making the team getting paid, to really work to move toward vaccines and get compliance. And I think by that way, carrot and stick. The idea that if you want to make the team and you're the 53rd guy or the 59th guy on a roster to get active pay and you're not vaccinated and you cause danger, well, I think that puts some pressure on you. If you're a veteran who has real questions about vaccine efficacy or some political beliefs that are strongly held, then my thought is you probably will get pressure from your teammates about not costing them money, because players in the NFL earn their salary in weekly game checks during the season. They aren't always paid that way, but they're earned in 17 weekly installments, and that's a key thing. To be ready on game day and eligible to play is a key part of this process.
Widen the aperture for us a little bit as we think about today's NFL player, and just sticking with the NFL for a second. I mean, it is a time of a much more empowered athlete, a much more outspoken athlete in many ways. I mean, we're talking to you on a week where, you know, Aaron Rodgers is once again in the headlines about his, I think to use the technical term, beef with his current team and some of his unhappiness. That is not certainly a new phenomenon, but when you factor in these COVID discussions into a general sense that athletes feel more emboldened, I guess, how does this play out in the broader scheme of things?
Well, I think it probably adapts and moves over from the public idea that COVID has and vaccines and masks have been politicized from the beginning. So you're playing to your own base, if you will. You're playing to the group of people who you come from, or from whom your fans come from. So there's a benefit in taking the positions that certain players are taking. And I think I would add that obviously we've noted with the African American community, which is a majority of NFL players, there is a vaccine hesitancy based on history. So I think you're seeing a bit of a storm in that way, that the groups in the NFL are come from, in to some degree, kind of red state America, where football is still powerful, and then, you know, a predominantly number of African American players. So I think you're seeing both demographics and politics operating together here.
Expanding on that topic, and in now taking it in a general aspect, because of this, now when the NFL steps up to the bargaining table, what are we looking at now? Have we set up a more contentious atmosphere?
Well, the NFL doesn't have to step up to a bargaining table for 10 more years. They've kind of won the battle with their union, and so I think the issue you have here, and I was involved in trying to move that back and not enter into a 10-year deal with some players last go round. But I think the NFL has the power here. And I think what they're using is their economic power, the power that they pay players in weekly installments and game checks, and that players have short careers and live 6 months out of the year without a game check, is a very significant influencer. And I think that's the power the NFL has. The players' union, to some degree, has to decide how they feel about this. Where are they going to step up for their players? And sometimes you have to be conscious of, can you step up to support the rights of your players over something you don't agree with, as a morally or ethically?
So in the end here, Bob, who holds the hammer? The owners or the players?
It's Roger Goodell, and he's using the hammer against both his owners, kind of deftly, and his players. And I think he's been acting decisively and pretty strongly, and I suspect you'll see pretty strong compliance.
All right, Bob, I think it would be journalistic malpractice if we had someone of your stature and experience and we didn't at least throw in one question about the other big story that we're talking about all the time, which is NIL. And, you know, having seen this from the perspective of a former player agent, like, what do you make of this and how should we be thinking about it from a business lens?
I think it actually is probably a pretty good thing that's happening in the college athletic space. It gives college athletes a chance for greater opportunity and fairness. It gives them a chance to build their brand and be entrepreneurial. And I think at the end of the day, it inures to more interest in college sports and maybe more interest in sports other than the big sports. Does it fundamentally upset the apple cart? I don't think tremendously. The Olympics are going on right now and have allowed NIL opportunities or opportunities for athletes to pursue endorsement deals for about 30 years now, so since the Dream Team. So I think that's a space that's going to be interesting, although I don't think most people truly understand it or have looked at it. I think they see it as more dire or more problematic, or in some cases they want to embrace it as an advantage.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating, and certainly something we're going to be looking at closely, along with, you know, so many of these issues that all, as you said at the top, this all comes down to a lot of the economics that are surrounding this. Bob Boland, thank you so much. He teaches in the law school and the labor school at Penn State University, former player agent. We really, really appreciate the time. This is fantastic context for our audience as we're trying to look forward to what is going to be, once again, a very different NFL season. Thank you so much.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
So now let's get the perspective on COVID protocols, vaccinations, the upcoming NFL season, and so much more with Warrick Dunn. He, of course, is a three-time Pro Bowl running back. He's a businessman. He's a philanthropist. And now he is a limited partner in the ownership group of the Atlanta Falcons. He joins us from Atlanta. Warrick, how are you doing?
I'm good.
It's really great to have you with us and to talk about a very specific issue that is top of mind for a lot of NFL owners, players, and fans, because there's now an economic element, a very clear economic element to how the NFL is approaching COVID. Essentially, what they're saying is that if teams violate the protocols and there are positive cases, the teams involved in the game will forfeit that game and, more importantly, forfeit the revenues and all the economics associated with that. Help us understand your perspective as a former player and now as a part owner of the Atlanta Falcons.
Well, pro football, it's a business. You know, I know that from an athlete's point of view, I'm going to look at it as that I need to make sure that I'm prepared, that I'm always ready for the moment. That's how I always approach the game. So it's pressure on guys to perform week in and week out. And, you know, they have to be ready. That's what you want your star players to do. But you also want the young guys to come in and get acclimated, but also show up, prove themselves, and, you know, potentially battle for starting positions and playing time and those things. Now, when you actually think about the business side of it, you know, you're trying to make sure that we can have fans in the stadium, you know, full houses, you know, all the guys, you know, they want to try to encourage all players and coaches to be vaccinated so that now, you know, we're protecting each other. And I just think it has to really just focus on what's in the best interest of, you know, the league and your team. And as teammates, you want to take care of each other. So I think guys have to be open to doing things that sometimes you're not accustomed to, and that's just part of being a team. But I know also at the business side of it, they're really just trying to figure out ways that we could make sure that we could give the fans what they want. But we have to continue to improve and make these adjustments and do what's in the best interest of not just one individual, but the entire football league. So it's going to be a challenging year to make these adjustments, but I think they're just trying to do what's in the sport's best interest.
Well, I have to bring up the point about the NFL, bringing up the mandate now that if a team forfeits their game because of COVID, not only will that team lose their pay, but the opposing team, who they were supposed to face, will lose their pay also. And I'm just wondering what you think about that.
Well, I mean, it's mixed emotions. You know, when you're a player, it's like, you know, that's not fair. You know, why should we suffer because some guy on another team or this team didn't do their part? And, you know, I don't think that's right. You know, it's not their fault because of another team. So, I mean, it could be some challenges there. But I do know overall, you have to try to put in some guidelines and some mandates so that, you know, we can have a productive year playing a game of football and everybody have the opportunity to play every game and not have this up and down where 1 week we're going to play on the Monday. Oh, we may have to play on a Wednesday. We got to play on a Tuesday. You know, I think last year they adjusted. I mean, everyone did. But I just think now they're trying to just, instead of following up, they're trying to lead first and put things out so that everyone can make adjustments. And I think that's a better strategy. Is it going to always be right? No, we don't like a lot of things about society and what people say that the rules or laws or whatever, but we all have to adjust. And I just think this is going to be an adjustment period for everybody.
So from what I understand, inside club facilities now, they put colored wristbands on players who are vaccinated and a different color on those who are unvaccinated. They can't eat in the same room together. They can't work out in the same weightlifting room together. Can this possibly divide a team and really hurt them?
Well, it could. You know, when you're separating guys who are unvaccinated, who are vaccinated, I mean, that could hurt a team. Football is definitely a chemistry team sport, and we have to rely on each other to be successful, and it's not one individual. So I think that could happen. And for me, how I would look at it is that, you know, I'm more of a family person anyway, so I'm always take care of my people. They're the most important things. We all have to make sacrifices for each other to be successful. And I just think it has, you know, those individuals who are vaccinated and the ones who are not vaccinated. You have to make a decision, you know, within yourself. You know, what are you going to sacrifice? And, you know, being great and all the great athletes will tell you is that you have to sacrifice things to get to the next level, to move forward, to be great. And these guys who are unvaccinated, you know, there could be some tension on the team because if someone else gets COVID on the team and now you have to forfeit a game, that could have some huge repercussions down the road.
So, Warrick, I want to talk about your post-playing career. Tell us about sort of how you divide your time, because you're very close with Arthur Blank. You're a minority owner of the Falcons, so you've got that perspective. You have created a business and philanthropic empire of sorts around yourself. How do you divide your time? Break it down for us.
You know, growing up, being oldest of six, you know, I've had to put my family first. So, you know, for me, yeah, I must make sure that I'm able to spend time with my family. I think that is vital in my life, and that's what I've done. You know, I spend a lot of time on charity, trying to support programs, other business ventures that I'm a part of, that I try to participate in. I'm going to go to practice, training camp practice, when it comes to the Falcons. I'm there to support and work with partners and sponsors and those things, because I try to always elevate, you know, who we are as an organization. And I try to support Mr. Blank any way that I can. But I love doing yard work at home. And, you know, just those little things that, you know, some people may take for granted. I learned at an early age that, you know, you got to cherish those moments. And I think COVID has definitely highlighted that a little bit more. I think we've all taken a look at being more intentional about where we spend our time, because you just never know. And, you know, I just try to have a balanced life.
I am for any athlete getting as much money as they can during negotiations, especially NFL players. Aaron Rodgers, quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, he kind of had a festivus and airing of grievances. Aaron Rodgers has not been happy with the Packers, and there has been some contention if he was going to retire instead of staying with the Packers. So they've been trying to work out a deal, and he held a press conference. What do you think about when some athletes go through that negotiating process, and sometimes it's not pretty? What are your thoughts about that?
He's proven himself to be an elite player. Should he be making personnel decisions? That, I have no idea. I can't knock him if he wants to do that. We all have an opinion on who should be on the team or whatever. But I just think, for me, stay out of the front office and really focus on the things that you can control. And as a player, I've always tried to do that. I think Aaron, you know, he's been around a long time. Well, a great player. Do you want to force him into retirement? I just think he's passionate about winning and being much more consistent. So he's a guy who's going to voice his opinion. It's up to the Packers to make a decision of what they want to do. But I just hope the best, obviously, for Aaron, because the Packers are going to make that money. You know, you want the players who are playing to make as much money as they can while they have the opportunity.
Warwick, as a part owner of the Falcons and a good friend with Arthur Blank, do you feel any responsibility to educate the unvaccinated players on the team or to give them a little nudge in the direction that they should get vaccinated?
Well, I think it's important that we do educate people on the vaccinations and why they should and the importance of it. Can you force anyone? There's no mandate to do that, but I think it is important that you do educate people. And, you know, I believe in the science, so I don't have a problem listening and really understanding that it's truly not just about myself, but again, I'm a preach team. If we are a team, you know, I got to do the things that's going to help me and my teammates, you know, put the best product on the field. So I know some guys on the league have balked at, you know, that they have to get vaccinated and so forth. And I just want them to take a step back, and I respect how they feel. You know, we all are only individuals, but it's going to be challenging to, I think, for us to really turn a corner and every player vaccinate. I think guys, they have a certain way they feel, and I have to respect the way that they feel. But I do believe in the science, and the science speaks. You have a lot of individuals that know people that are in the hospital that have died from COVID, or, you know, they're in the hospital because of this Delta variant, that I think is starting to wake people up and really see that we need to do those little things. And all of our bodies, as you know, I'm sure you guys know, that it responds. Our bodies respond to different things differently. Everybody's not going to have the same response. So we just have to make sure that, you know, we educate people on, you know, the pluses and minuses and what's in their best interest and their family's best interest.
So, Warwick, you know, you've seen some interesting things over the course of your career as a college player, as a professional athlete, and now as we've been discussing, you know, sitting in a different seat when it comes to the NFL as an owner. You know, we have seen players, and I'm thinking beyond COVID and beyond even this moment, we have really seen a rise in players feeling empowered and speaking out on social justice. This is something, you know, you have very much put your money where your mouth is, as it were, and you're incredibly involved philanthropically, building homes for folks and many other things. How do you see the role of the modern athlete and the responsibility in terms of speaking out and giving back?
Well, I think when I played, the role was a lot different. You know, I don't think we felt empowered. Mm. I felt if we stepped out and said something, you know, we would get a lot of backlash, and I think you guys probably know you've seen players in the past who tried to say something and it's, you know, been like blacklisted. But I just think this day and age, with obviously more things that you can actually see on video, and it's not hearsay anymore, you can actually see the evidence, these guys are emboldened and they want to see change, and you have to advocate for that and you know, take a stance. And I think they're doing that. They're trying to do it in productive ways and raise more awareness. And I advocate for families when it comes to housing, financial literacy, health and wellness, just family bond, this togetherness, the support, having both parents involved in kids' lives. If you want to change things, you have to start at the root cause of it. Does families have stability and with housing and so forth? So it's a lot of things that need to be fixed. It's a lot of things that need to, the corner needs to be turned. But again, that doesn't happen unless you change policy. And that's really what it comes down to, the people that you elect. So it's a lot of things that these guys, that they're raising more awareness about, they're putting money behind, they're advocating for, they're fighting for. And you just need to continue to grow that base. And if you can get more people to really understand the position that you're coming from, that, this could affect you. It can affect you, and it can affect you. And sometimes you don't realize it as an individual until you actually go through it. So, I think these guys are, they're taking the right steps because they've been there and done that and lived that life. And if they can see the people behind them start to live a better overall productive life when it comes to, just the different issues that we have in society overall, I think it's a great thing. And they're actually putting money, the money that they make, they're supporting these organizations and doing these things to help their communities and society overall.
One topic that is now in the forefront today when it comes to athletes involves mental health. Simone Biles, recently in the Olympics, she withdrew from certain competitions because of her mental health. Naomi Osaka also brought that. And there have been other NBA players as well talking about mental health. What are your thoughts about that and what athletes are now going through today?
Well, I'm an advocate for mental health because, I went to counseling when I played professional football, and I was ashamed at first. I think it's important advocating for people to have a balanced life or a better balance when it comes to mental health is important. But I do believe because of what I've been through in my life, because of the adversity and, growing up early on, if someone would have said, and I've talked to friends about this, is that, hey, if coach would have, you would have said to coach, I don't just feel like I'm into it today. It's like, you got to suck it up, get it together, and let's go, right? Because your team is, dependent on you. And a lot of times we wouldn't have persevered in life if we didn't refocus and really try to push through things. Because I ran track my entire life, played football. It's a lot of things that, that I need to just take a step back, refocus, and get ready for that moment. And just give it everything I have because people are depending upon me. So I can't always bail out on them. And not saying Simone or anyone else bailed out. What I'm saying is that you work on that mental health to get yourself prepared for those moments so that when you get there, now you can truly focus and give your team or your own individual self that full throttle of I'm giving it everything I have and I'm leaving it all on, I'm leaving it all out there. So if I'm successful, great. If I fail, then I can also be an example for people that support me that, you fall down, you get back up and you try again, right? So I think it's pluses and minuses to what Simone has done, what Naomi has done. When you look at the people that come before them, if they would have did that years ago because it wasn't accepted, we would have bashed them as society. It's like, well, you gotta push through it. Right now, you raise more awareness about mental health, so now we think, hey, put yourself in a position where you're getting the support that you need, but you still have to push forward because, one, you're being paid and all those things. So I think it's a double-edged sword when it comes to that, but everybody has their own stance and their own position. I respect that, but sometimes we all would do something different, and that's just human nature that we can all think of something different that we would do in different moments that we have to support each other, but we may not always agree with it. And, that's just how things are today when it comes to mental health, because it's a difficult and complicated topic. It's not one right. It's not one wrong.
So, Warwick, where is the National Football League today with mental health in terms of recognizing it, providing support? On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you say the NFL stands right now?
Well, I can tell you before they weren't there. Today, now they actually have mental health individuals that are part of the organization that guys can go to, that guys could, they could do things in private, because a lot of times other guys, they don't want to know. They don't want people to know that they're talking to individuals. So I think they've taken a step. Are they at a 10? I don't think they're at a 10 yet. They're probably 6, 7. You know, they've made great strides over the years, and I think they can only get better, because I'm part of the NFL Legends program as well, and we have mental health programs that we go through, you know, when we all get together to educate us on mental health, some of the issues, the trends that are going on, how we can help assist other individuals that are dealing with that. So I think now today is more awareness to it, right? You know, and I've been through it, still living it, and I go through it. So I do understand, and I know that it is a journey. You don't get to the finish line just because, you know, you start running. It is a journey. The finish line is never going to, you're never going to get there, because this thing is going to be going on forever. So I just think we have to continue to educate on mental health and prepare each other, you know, for the ups and downs that we're going to face. And that's just now more accepted in society, and people respect it. And again, it's going to be a journey, and we have to make those adjustments moving forward as a society, but also as athletes.
Well, Warrick, it has been such a treat to talk to you. Thank you so much. Thanks for everything you're doing for my hometown down in Atlanta. Hoping for a good season for the Falcons. I know there's been some rebuilding, as it were, going on, but glad to know that you're on the sidelines whispering in Mr. Blank's ear about some things that maybe they could be doing down there. So best of luck to you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
So, guys, Warrick Dunn, really interesting conversation, you know, as I said to him, wide-ranging for sure, and it's a tough time for an athlete, a complicated time for an athlete. He certainly understands a lot of these issues. You know, keep in mind, this is a guy who lost his mom when he was very young. He raised his siblings, and so when he talks about kind of where you come from and how that influences you, he really knows what he's talking about. This is not easy for the NFL. It's not easy for the world of sports to grapple with all of these issues, Lynchy.
Yeah, I know. I think the word throughout this thing is nudge. They don't want to force people to get vaccinated. I know Warrick Dunn, he probably 15 years ago, would be in there and tipping tables over in that cafeteria telling the young guys, you better get your butt down there and get vaccinated right now because I'm not going to lose myself a game check, and we're not going to forfeit a game just because you're being stubborn. And now he's more mature, he's retired, and he's a part owner, so he has to be a little bit more diplomatic. But you could feel in his presence that, you know, TAM is number one, and he carries that team concept to the Atlanta Falcons.
I am so glad that he reinforced something that I've been saying since the NFL made this announcement. Don't mess with my dinner plate, because if you do, I'm going to bring my whoop tushy stick, and we're going to have a moment.
And
well, I cleaned it up, but that's exactly what I'm saying. Don't penalize me because you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, especially when it comes to providing for my family.
And you think about the impact on the broader organization. You know, Warrick Dunn's now looking at this from a business perspective. He said that right off the top. This is a business, you know, and he sees that now every day, not just from the perspective that he used to have of I'm in the business of Warrick Dunn. He's now in the business of the Atlanta Falcons. His livelihood in part at this point depends on that team continuing to grow in valuation. And he's looking at the gate, and he's looking at concessions, and he's looking at merch and all of those different things. He and Arthur Blank and the rest of the team there. So these are real economic issues. And the good news, I think, is that often it's economics and your pocketbook that ultimately gets you to move on something. So, you know, here's hoping that maybe that's another lever that's going to be pulled, or another sort of pain point, as it were, that will get us to where we need to get.
My goal is to be the number one pick. That's something I've been dreaming of since a kid.
It feels better to be number one than number five.
I wear the number because of Mike.
We have a chance to go for three in a row.
Good numbers at a good time.
When I first started wearing that number, I was just happy and proud.
Bloomberg Business of Sports, the number of the week.
It's time for the number of the week.
Here we go.
This is an easy one. Well, I shouldn't say easy. I'll keep it simple. Let's put it that way. Tokyo Olympics opening ceremony. How much did it cost? And let's transfer yen to dollars.
Yeah, no, let's not do let's not do yen. So this is the total cost. I'll go $20
million. This is just opening, right?
This is just the opening ceremony.
I'm gonna go up to $49.999 million.
Well, Inchy, you finally made it on stage. And oh. I was kind of surprised when I read this. $150 million.
What?
For the opening ceremony?
For the opening ceremony. I had to reread that. It's like, my goodness. It's all the stuff that happened. And according to the Japanese magazine, Shukan Bunshin, that's how much it cost, $150 million or 16.5 billion yen.
That is outrageous.
You know, I'm going to opt. I was so far off. I'm going to opt out from accepting my prize because I was I was so far off, but I don't deserve to win. Neither one of us deserve to win.
Can you imagine telling Drew, look, I know I'm short, but man, I'm not coming up on stage.
I'm not coming up.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports Show. We're here each and every week at the same time, plus online, wherever you get your podcasts. You can catch those Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. I'm Michael Barr on Twitter. At Big Bar Sports.
Still scratching my head over 150 large. I'm Mike Lynch. You can follow me at Lynchy, WCBB.
And I'm Jason Kelly on Twitter at Jason Kelly News. Woefully inadequate at the number of the week. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll catch you next week.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports, Bloomberg Radio around the world.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.